We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Field of 68 Media Network presents Red is the New Orange, a Syracuse basketball podcast.
Vince intercepts a pass, breakaway for the freshman guard, he flies and slams! Aerial assault from Judah Vince!
Looking to go back door to Bell, they get it to Amir, corner three, knocks it down! Chris Bell, the sharpshooter!
Bringing you everything you need to know out of the 315.
Up top, Williams surges ahead, up with the right hand and in! A pretty up-and-under move from Benny Williams to beat his man.
Over to Taylor. He skips into the lane, puts up a floater, and drops in.
Let's get it started with your hosts, Ian Unsworth and Johnny Gadamowicz.
A lot has happened since we last chatted here on Red is the New Orange. And it's only been 4 days. Ian Unsworth, Johnny Gadamowicz with you. We'll get through all the nitty-gritty, the bits and pieces of the Syracuse season that we're trying to pick up, collect, while also preparing for the biggest dance of them all. And if you watched that Virginia game last night, I'm sorry, but we did too. So let's get into it. Remember to give us a follow. Red is the New Orange on Twitter, F68_Cuse, and the Field of 68 podcast network, as well as the Field of 68. If you don't know what to do with your bracket, I guarantee you Rob Doster and the crew have answers for you, because everyone is picking, even Tyler Hansborough, even Kevin Sweeney, even John Fanta. Everyone's got the tips and tricks for
you. Got to go with the gut. Come on, don't take the expert's advice. Go with your gut feeling. As soon as you start reading too deeply into some of that expert analysis, that's where things start to get wonky.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, my girlfriend's bracket last year was better than mine, and she didn't watch a single lick of basketball until the ACC tournament. So, all that being said, I'd rather at least have one or two expert opinions, especially because we probably have some listeners that haven't watched much basketball besides Syracuse. So if you don't know what's going on in the Mountain West or the Southland Conference or anything like that, these guys will get you filled in. Speaking of ACC tournament basketball, my girlfriend didn't watch this year's tournament, but we did. We tried to predict it. We were really wrong. And North Carolina State, carried through by 7 or 8 healthy bodies, Kevin Keats's last wish as North Carolina State head coach, getting a contract extension after winning the ACC tournament, but 5 games in 5 days. The only other team to do that was UConn with Kemba, and then they won the NCAA tournament. I don't know if that's in the cards for North Carolina State, but still, really impressive run.
Was not on our bingo cards, Ian. You wonder if it makes the Syracuse loss a little bit of an easier pill to swallow in that first round.
So
when you think about, all right, at least you lost to the team that went on to win it all. But think about the week that NC State had from beating Syracuse, Duke, Virginia, and North Carolina eventually. It was a heck of a week. And you point to DJ Burns, you point to DJ Horn, but it was really a full team effort. You don't beat a team like North Carolina, a number one seed in March Madness, if all your guys don't show up ready to go to battle. And everyone wanted to have the take of, oh, they're going to be gassed. They're going to be winded. You know, how long can they keep this going? You tip your cap to the Wolfpack, who had absolutely nothing to lose, playing with house money, and it worked out in their favor.
Michael O'Connell hits the game-tying, buzzer-beating three-pointer from about 35 feet out, off the backboard, around the rim, and in to go to overtime against Virginia. The Cavaliers were woeful from the free throw line that entire game after almost blowing it against BC, who knocked out my title game pick in Clemson. Whoop-de-doo, Tigers, they got to get back before the NCAA tournament starts. I think one thing that I guess we'll give I'll give Kevin Keats a little bit of credit for this. Offensively, when you have a short rotation, guys need to rest. And the phrase is never rest on defense, it's always rest on offense. When DJ Burns gets the ball and does his methodical, I'm going to catch it at the three-point line and back you all the way down to the block, no one else needs to move because they know what's happening. He is going to shoot it. Or if the double comes, he's going to pass. But 75% of the time, when DJ Burns has the ball on the block, he's shooting. So everyone else just gets to rest, recuperate, hands on your knees, catch your breath, and watch the big fella go to work. And so that's how you steal breathers and steal breaks for your 7 or 8 man rotation. I mean, that unlocked something different for North Carolina State that they didn't have against Syracuse the first time because DJ Burns wasn't starting for some reason. We both were super confused about why he wasn't in the game off the jump. And you see how much of a difference firing on all cylinders Burns makes. Virginia couldn't stop him. UNC couldn't stop him. Like, this guy won the ACC tournament.
But I want to touch on something you mentioned, Ian, and that it wasn't one-dimensional, right? If there's one thing we've said about DJ Burns, it's that for a big guy, this guy is a heck of a passer too. Like, yeah. How many times did we see that double come? And he would just zip it cross court in a pass where, all right, if it's Malik Brown or even Kyle Filipowski making that pass, you're holding your head saying, what are you doing? Go up. But Burns would find a way to put some oomph behind it, to give a, you know, give his shooters, a wide open shooters, a fastball on the right or left wing, and they would knock down the shot. So I think for me, that was what was most impressive about NC State, is that, okay, yeah, you can say kind of one-dimensional, you know what their plan of attack is, but they would still keep you on your toes. So, like, there were different ways that they could get to the rim, knock down shots, and keep pace with these teams like North Carolina, who know how to put up points in a hurry. And I think that's something, too, that we got to credit them for. To go from Virginia to North Carolina, two pretty much diametrically opposite teams in terms of pace of play, scoring the basketball, you know, offensive identity versus defensive identity, and the ability to take them both down, I think is something that is super impressive. Now, look, is this Wolfpack team going to go on some sort of magical run? Probably not, as much as I want to see DJ Burns featured in one shining moment, which he probably will. But I think they're good enough to go out there and win a game. I don't know if they're a second weekend team, but I wouldn't be surprised if they play into Saturday, Sunday. And again, with when you're hot. And with the way they're playing right now, your guess is as good as mine.
They play Texas Tech in the first round, and then they get the winner of Kentucky-Oakland if they do advance. When DJ Horn had 14 points in the first half against North Carolina, being that he's from Raleigh, it just kind of made sense that these guys were winning the tournament. On the Syracuse perspective, the Orange get knocked out Wednesday night. And then we wait till Sunday. Obviously, SU is not in the NCAA tournament. But then the NIT bracket comes out. You look at every projection, it seems like Syracuse could have been there, and they weren't. And as I said earlier, the Orange were not in the remaining four top net rankings for teams that didn't make the NCAA tournament. But the Orange still got an at-large bid and turned it down. This is a really interesting conundrum that coaches of these middling high major teams find themselves in, because this is not just a Syracuse thing. Ole Miss turned it down. Memphis turned it down. I mean, Memphis has won the NIT a couple times now. Like, all across the country, you're seeing teams turn down these NIT bids. And I think it's because the transfer portal opens right after your season ends.
which is bonkers, but that's a story for another day.
But guys need to get their roster straightened out, especially when you have high school recruits coming in. You want to recruit for 2025, 2026. You don't have time to be wasting in postseason play that really isn't worth all that much.
Yeah, I don't think it's a waste, though. That's where I'll push back a little bit. Like, you look at the Syracuse program, right? They've been to the Big Dance Ian one time in the last 5 years. I'm sorry, to act all high and mighty and you know, like they're sort of above it. I'm sorry, you're not. You are what your record says you are. And you look at the past couple of years, they haven't been very good. To think that they're sort of above postseason play of any variety, I think rubs not only me the wrong way, but rubs the fan base the wrong way. I get what you're saying about the transfer portal, and you want to set your sights toward what really matters and piecing together a roster. But think about this team, right? All sophomores, young, have kind of been through the ringer now for not one but 2 years together. A chance to play postseason ball of any variety, even though it doesn't mean all that much, I think is something that can still help in the long run, right? You go up against good teams. You get that little extra sense of big games, and I'll say big games in air quotes because, again, it's the NIT, but just the ability to continue to test yourself and find something out about your squad that maybe you didn't previously know. We can go back and forth on this. I mean, there's no real right answer. I just feel like the whole decline thing bothers me, because to decline it is to say, okay, we don't want to touch that. We want nothing to do with it. I don't think Syracuse is above that. I really don't.
The record and all that sort of stuff may not show that, but Syracuse also only had 8 healthy players by the end of the season. If Peter Carey is concussed, the guys are dinged up, you've played a long year, and Judah and JJ have played 35 to 40 minutes a game. It's just tough to ask a team for your best effort when you don't reach your goal. And again, you see the day after Syracuse declines the invite, 2 guys are portaling out. So then you would only, again, you only have 6 guys, because people are making these decisions so fast. No one is sitting on their laurels and saying, all right, let me figure it out. Should I go on the portal? You know, let me talk to some people. Let me, yeah, no.
Most of these guys probably had their mind made up, if we're being honest, by the beginning or middle of February.
Because they know what their roles are. Not much is changing next year when Syracuse is going to bring in more talent. Chance Westry's back healthy, and you're hunting in the transfer portal for a big man, as we probably talked about. You might be getting a point guard. So Justin Taylor and Quadir Copeland are the first two to hit the exit doors. Taylor first, and then a couple hours later, Quadir follows. Taylor is pretty obvious. We know why that happened. The role wasn't working out. His shot this year looked extremely funky, and it seemed like just as mental as it was physical. Of course, a very level-headed kid, always nice to talk to when we were members of the Syracuse media on site. But something like that, when you're in that deep of a funk, you need a full reset.
Yeah, and if you're Justin Taylor, you're probably almost left wondering, why not last year, right? Because it was a similar freshman year for JT, and I think everybody had hopes that he would sort of find that role and give you that consistency that seemed to always escape him for one reason or another. But you look at his season this year, and there's really not a lot to write home about. I mean, he had a couple of nice games in the non-conference portion of the schedule. I think he had like 15 against Cornell or something like that. But really, ever since conference play rolled around, let's call it like it is, he was a non-factor, which is frustrating when you think about what could have been with this Syracuse team of, okay, if they had that one more guy who was a little bit more consistent, who could shoot, and a lot of people gravitated towards either Chris Bell or Justin Taylor. Never panned out. Obviously, we wish him the best. He's the kind of guy who I think can go somewhere and be impactful. It's just about the right fit and the right situation.
It's not at the high major level, unfortunately.
Yeah.
On the other side, Quadir Copeland is a bit more puzzling. But Johnny, let me give you this. 3 years ago, Kadari Richmond walked into Jim Boeheim's office and asked him, hey, coach, am I going to start at point guard next year? And Boeheim said no. And Richmond hit the portal and now was the best player on a Seton Hall team that I think many people, after watching Virginia do what they did last night, we'll say was probably snubbed from being one of the last teams in to the NCAA tournament. Quinnier Copeland is obviously not Kadari Richmond, but at the same time, I think Q has a vision of a role for himself that he didn't necessarily see playing out at Syracuse this year. He got great minutes, but it wasn't at the point guard. And I think that's what Quinnier Copeland wants to become, and that's why he left.
Yeah, he knows his worth. It's tough to blame him, right? This is a guy that can go out there and be a starting point guard, I think. He showed it time and time again this year. He didn't get the opportunity to, but the talent was always there. Fan favorite, likable guy, easy to root for, had the big moments. Obviously, he'll be remembered for the Miami game and that buzzer-beating win over the Hurricanes in the Dome. And it's sad, to be honest, because now this is the second guy, as you mentioned, Kadari Richmond, and over the course of the past 3 or 4 years now, you know, I think if you're a Syracuse fan, you selfishly kind of hope that it doesn't become another Richmond situation where he goes on to become a first-team All-Big East guy. Will he? Probably not. But the talent was always there. It was never in question. What I wonder, and we will save the Judah talk for the back end here, but, you know, we talk about how close those two guys were, right? And, you know, you saw them together all the time. They were really, you know, like Tweedledee and Tweedledum, we'll call them. But it was the kind of thing where, okay, that news trickles down and everybody starts thinking, what if? But with the way you phrase it, Ian, it is very interesting where maybe Red knows something as far as Judah not going anywhere. And that is why the door didn't open for Copeland. Copeland hits the portal.
Yeah, and let's make it clear that Quinnier Copeland, in this day and age of college basketball, is going to have a tough time really finding a fit as a pure point guard. He can't shoot the ball. It's tough to be a Division I point guard when your three-point shooting percentage is under 30%, and your shot is slow. That's not a role that most coaches see you in, especially when you're also 6'6", and point guards are small. That's just how it is nowadays. There are so many elite, speedy guys that can move with the ball, move without the ball, and shoot it at a high clip that are under 6'6". So Copeland's going to have to go somewhere where he's surrounded by shooting and where he can use his passing and pick and roll skills to his advantage and spray it out to guys on the wing. Where that is, we have no clue.
Almost like a Kihei Clark kind of role, you know, for ACC fans over the past couple of years, right? A guy who's not, no, but that's not that that's the comp. I mean, that's the kind of role.
I'm sorry, but that's apples to oranges. Like, yes, Copeland would belly up and guard the other team's best player. But when I think Quinnier Copeland, I do not in any
not
way
a player comp, a
think
role.
Of Kihei Clark.
All right. Let's keep it moving.
Okay, so as you kind of dangled in front of me, Johnny, the Judah Mintz, Malik Brown, J.J. Starling, and every other piece that's still on the Syracuse roster situation will unfold. And, of course, there's the chance that we put this podcast out, and 3 hours later, we've got three more Syracuse players in the portal. But as Autry goes portal shopping, we remember that Chance Westry's coming back. We remember that Donnie Freeman and Elijah Moore, two top 100 recruits, will be on campus next year.
We're having themselves one heck of a final high school campaign as well.
Both of them, yeah. So it's not like these two losses of, let's call it like it is, role players will seriously change Syracuse's season outlook for next year. There are still many cards to be dealt and many hands to be played, but right now Syracuse can still be just fine. This is not the world crumbling.
Yeah, I think you got to prioritize keeping Mintz, though. I think if you lose Mintz, then it becomes, okay, now what? And I know there are people who are probably going to push back on that and say, look, we've seen 2 years of a Judah Mintz-led basketball team, and it hasn't gotten them anywhere. But that doesn't mean that you're rushing to push them out the door either.
No.
Right? Like, Judah is an all-ACC-type talent who you need to do what you can. I don't know what the sales pitch is. I don't know who you go out there and recruit. I don't know what the portal looks like. But for me, that's priority number one. And it's scary because, you know, last year he kind of tested the NBA waters a little bit for whatever reason, decided, okay, not there. So clearly it's a thought that is in his head. What you hope is that he doesn't want to look elsewhere collegiately, because that would be really tough to swallow. After you lose Copeland, now it's Judah's backcourt for the taking, him and JJ, of course. So I think you do what you have to make sure he stays. There is still a world where Syracuse makes the NCAA tournament next year and Judah Mintz is the best player on the basketball team. I don't think anyone would refute that. It's about how do you fill out this roster and tier it in a way where, okay, you know your best player isn't a great shooter, and he's a point guard, like we just mentioned, Ian, you don't see a ton of, but there are ways to make it happen.
Exactly, and you get shooters from the portal. You have Bell keep improving. I mean, I think if we point out the leaps and bounds that guys on this team took, it was clearly Chris Bell going from year one to year two, taking a step forward both offensively and defensively.
I'll chime in quickly with that because I think Bell is a name that a lot of people have thought about when it comes to going portaling. I don't think it's the end of the world if he does, just because how many guys are out there like I think his role of being a shooter, let's call it like it is, and not much else, is pretty replaceable. Now, would you like it to be the homegrown guy who you saw make a jump from year one to year two? Absolutely. But what I wouldn't want to see is, okay, let's say 3 hours after we record, the news comes out, Chris Bell is hitting the portal, and then all of a sudden Syracuse Twitter is acting like the sky is falling. Let's slow down if we get there. And obviously we haven't got there yet. But again, there's 100 Chris Bells in the transfer portal. That's just how it is nowadays.
There's 100 Chris Bells. Hot take there from Johnny. But we will take a quick break. We will come back, and we will talk about the NCAA tournament. Focusing on the ACC, which every year now has a bunch of mess around it because it's not a good conference, and these teams have this net ranking, but they're not let in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we will tell you how far each ACC team is going in the big dance. We'll be right back.
The best month of the year is here, which is why you need to know that we are now partnered with BetMGM. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68 all through the NCAA tournament. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, you can use the bonus code FIELD, and you will get up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM, regardless of whether or not that bet hits. Here's the best part. All you need to do is deposit and bet $10 of your hard-earned money. This is how you make it work. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using the bonus code FIELD. Deposit at least $10 and place your first wager on any game, and you get up to $1,500 in bonus bets regardless of the outcome of your bet. Just make sure you use that bonus code FIELD when you sign up. Most importantly, we do have some fun stuff coming for the conference tournaments and especially for the NCAA tournament. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odds boost, and what I love the most, a nice parlay boost for anything you could possibly imagine betting on in the NCAA tournament, from odds and getting an at-large bid to Final Four futures to the highest seed to make to the Sweet 16. I'm calling it right now. BetMGM is the king of the prop bet for your March Madness needs. So go download the BetMGM app, use the code FIELD, and sign up today. And while I've got you, a quick request, the best way to support the Field of 68 and our content you get for free is to engage with us. Rate and review the pod, like and share the YouTube videos, tell your friends about us. It helps in a world where the algorithm is king. And now, back to the show.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So we've got our trusty paper brackets here. Johnny went and got his off the fridge. If you're a real basketball fan, you take this thing, you put it up there with a magnet, and it's probably in the trash by Saturday. But honestly, that's how we'd all like it anyway. The whole mystique of the perfect bracket is that everyone's is completely total because it's good teams against good teams. What's not to like about that? However, Virginia committed a crime against basketball last night. We don't need to dwell too much on it, but geez.
Did you see this? Some guy had a shirt that said Virginia basketball is Iowa football.
I mean,
I thought that was a great comp.
It's so hard to watch.
Yeah.
It's so hard to watch. And this was clearly a Virginia team that if you put on that ACC tournament game, they struggled in the final moments. They couldn't score. And throughout the season, they had five or six losses by 20 points. When they lost, it was a train wreck. So I think the committee got that one wrong, and they're going to catch a lot of crap for it.
I think there was a stat that I saw in, or I don't even know if you want to call it a stat, but the Cavaliers went over 55 minutes of real time. And I think it was halftime included without a bucket.
Mind-boggling
stuff. And it's weird because, you know, this is a program that's won national championships in the not-too-distant past, and Tony Bennett is one heck of a coach, but it just – I don't know if they've got to get their NIL figured out or they've got to just, you know, adapt and change with the times. But some – I think there's going to be some shakeups in Charlottesville, not necessarily Bennett himself.
Not firing him.
No, but just in terms of their approach – I think is going to change this summer.
It's the way they play, man. No one wants to shoot. Their whole offense is predicated on setting a bajillion screens for open shooters. But no, when they catch the ball, no one is looking to shoot. They just want to move it to the next guy and keep on recycling. And it's so hard to watch. And I think it creates a lack of confidence in guys just getting downhill one-on-one. All right, four other teams in the tournament who actually might have a fighting chance at winning a few games. North Carolina, Clemson, Duke, and North Carolina State. We will start with the West region. That's UNC and Clemson. North Carolina, the one, is taking on the Fighting Keith Rads, the Wagner Seahawks, up in Johnny's area of the United States.
Pride of Staten Island.
Seven rotation players beat Howard last night. So they take on UNC, who will then have the winner of Mississippi State, Michigan State. Johnny, how far do you have the Tar Heels going in your bracket?
I think they're a Final Four team. I've said that on this podcast before. You know, I think they've got the right mesh of coaching, of age, of experience, of shooters, of it guys that can take over a game, whether it be Davis, Baycott. They've got the young blood and Cadeau, the freshman. I don't see how this Carolina team doesn't at least make it to the Elite Eight, but I think they win their region. I've got them going to the Final Four.
I've got them getting knocked off by Mississippi State.
Really?
Yes, in the round of 32, because we saw Baycott really struggle with DJ Burns, who just pushed him around. And Mississippi State has a guy named Tolu Smith, starting center, who can do the same thing, and they're physical. I think that's one thing that could knock UNC off their game a little bit, is just a team that plays rough and tries to knock you out. And there isn't really a team like that in the ACC. So I think that's a style, especially on a quick one-day turnaround, that UNC might not be ready for, and I think it could throw them off in a low-scoring affair. Clemson, the sixth seed, playing New Mexico. That's a very trendy upset pick. In fact,
the most trendy.
The books have New Mexico favored right now by 2 points. So does Clemson overcome that underdog status?
Yeah, I think they do. I actually think Clemson wins a couple of games here, and I'll let you in on my bracket a little bit here. I've got the 14-seeded Colgate Raiders. I've got David beating Goliath, taking down Baylor, creating a much more winnable round two game for Clemson. So I think Clemson wins a couple. They showed us during the regular season that this is a good basketball team, and maybe this is some ACC bias spreading in. But, you know, I think they're going to play angry, much like Carolina, an ACC tournament run that was shorter than they would have hoped, and they'll surprise some people.
So Clemson is getting a lot of flack because their guards aren't that good. New Mexico has a lot of experienced guards, but New Mexico doesn't have PJ Hall. They've got Nelly Jr. Joseph and JT Toppin, two guys that are like 6'8 inside. So I think Clemson probably wins two just because they have offensive rebounders and guys that can really create second chance opportunities. And if they beat New Mexico, I could see them beating Baylor. I just think Arizona on the bottom of the bracket is probably too much for them. All right. On the right side, the South region, Duke and North Carolina State. The Blue Devils have Vermont in Brooklyn, which is practically a Duke home game. And then they play the winner of Wisconsin and JMU. Johnny, who you got?
Say it with me, Ian. Duke is not a second weekend team. I think Duke beats Vermont, but regardless of who wins Wisco JMU,
wow.
I think they lose, whether wow. that's Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I have Wisconsin beating James Madison again. Another trendy upset pick, but everyone's pointing to this James Madison win over Michigan State as the reason that the Dukes are ready for March. I just don't see it. I think Wisconsin, especially after the way they played in the Big Ten tournament, and they have a dude in AJ Store, I think their multiple scoring options probably overwhelmed JMU and overwhelmed Duke as well. I mean, Wisconsin and Duke match up really well, but Wisco's more experienced. And at the end of the day, I think they overcome Duke, and that's where the Blue Devils run ends, right where it started. Last but not least, the Miracle Men, North Carolina State. Texas Tech in the first round, then Kentucky or Oakland.
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier. I think they win one game. I just don't think they win two. I could see the Wolfpack topping the Red Raiders. Kentucky is a three seed, can be sneaky. I don't know. There's so many good teams this year. I don't know if underseeded is the right word, but something about the Wildcats in that three spot just feels a little dangerous.
What about a team in the ACC that just runs you to death? We don't have that either. And Kentucky, every single game is going to score 100 points yeah. and lets you score 100 too. I don't know if North Carolina State, especially with its limited rotation, is up for that. Because they could slow games down. They could give it to Burns. But we've seen them look anemic on defense at times, even against Syracuse. And Kentucky, especially with the bevy of scores they have, will make you do that. So I think they beat Texas Tech just because, and they probably lose to Kentucky. So UNC, you have making the deepest run. Just as it's happened over the past couple of years, I've got the ACC kind of floundering out rather early.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're not high on any of them.
Well, I mean, maybe it's – I think it's the conferences that I've watched the most and have kind of come into favor with have all flopped out. I mean, I was on Howard last night, and they looked terrible for 30
By the way, Howard's
minutes.
Got that kid who's in, like, what, his seventh year and has Death one more year if he wants it? Year.
No, he definitely doesn't have one more. If he has
I
one
thought
more
I read something saying, don't quote me. I thought I read something saying he's got one more if he wants it.
Johnny, if he has one more year, I'm 18 again. Okay. I'm doing college over. There is no way Seth Towns should have another year of eligibility. Okay. Johnny, before we get out of here, who do you have winning the whole thing?
I think it's UConn. I know it's not cute. It's what everybody's doing, but they're deep at every position. Listen, I know how hard it is to win this thing 2 years in a row. But Dan Hurley's got a good thing going in stores. They just seem on a different tier than everybody else.
I've got Tennessee okay. playing UConn in the championship.
That's we got the same title game then.
Oh, wow. All right, maybe not. And I've got UConn winning too. Yes, it's over a quarter of the country that's picked UConn, but they're too deep. They're too good. The only way they get off is if they shoot badly from three, and I just don't see a team that forces them to clank a bunch. So – the Huskies it is. I think that's the majority of the country's pick, and we'll see if they get upended. And if there's any other Syracuse transfer news and notes, we'll hop back here and get you the latest updates. For now, signing off, Johnny and Ian. Give us a follow, F68_Cuse on Twitter, and enjoy March Madness. Whoever of us has a worse bracket will be singing One Shining Moment on the pod. So
get ready.
Maybe then, hopefully it's sooner, but we will see you around the corner.